All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast, episode 9. 999.
And we are finally back. It's this long hiatus of nothingness. It
yes.
is. Feel like my life has been lost and confused and unsorted without this program to keep me on track, my friend.
Well, I am just glad to say that we have sorted out all technical difficulties that we're aware of, and we are now on the path of the straight and narrow, the path of righteousness, the path of darkness. I don't know, but we're on the path now. And we will continue on.
Indeed. I like that. I like that a lot.
I'm glad that you like it. So, okay, so we already explained why we had the big hiatus and what was going on during that time period. Anything interesting happening as of late?
As of late, no, not really.
Okay, same here. Nothing.
Yeah,
nothing big happening. Okay, well then, I guess what we should do is pretty much just jump in with news.
Sure, let's do it. The news that I have is nothing amazing, but it could offend some folks, especially the Star Wars group. As we all know, we've covered it a couple times before, that the new Star Wars Blu-ray edition with all six films are being released. And of course, the original trilogy will be released with the enhancements. And some of these enhancements include Ewoks can blink, Han shoots first.
Again,
exactly. Darth Vader screams no when, when Sidious is shocking Luke and he does a horrible no. Doesn't even sound like James Earl Jones. I mean, I'm pretty sure that has to be somebody else doing the no, because it's just horrible. Like, you can find all these online, they're posted. It is just hysterical.
I am fairly certain that they pretty much just repeated the same no, no, from the end of episode 3. I'm pretty sure.
It's atrocious. And the only other really bad one, I mean, the Ewoks blinking eyes thing really isn't a big deal. I guess Han shooting first, that's how it should be. But the no thing is sounds bad and out of place. But whenever we first meet Obi-Wan Kenobi, when Luke is getting attacked by the sand dune monsters, I forget what they're called.
The sand people.
Yeah, the sand, there you go, the sand people. And Obi-Wan comes over the sand dune, he's pretending to be a creature of some sort that frightens the sand people away. Well, beforehand, there was no noise to accompany him showing up. Now, there is a noise. And that noise is frightening. And not frightening in the, oh my gosh, you know, I have to run away from that. It's frightening in horribleness. It's just so out of place. And I would be curious to see what, you know, how people react to it. Because there haven't been really too many comments about that. A lot more people have been arguing about the Darth Vader no and the and Han shooting first, I guess. Because people still, you know.
Well, they're happy about that. No, they're happy about that one. Because he changed it back in 98, 97, with the 20-year re-release, he changed it so that Greedo shot first.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody got mad about, because they liked that Han shot first. So now he's fixed that one. They're talking about it in a good way.
Yeah, but maybe it's divided. I don't know, but I really do know that there's a whole lot of people that are there. They get in battles over it. Apparently, it's like there's subdivisions within the Star Wars community. Like you know, it's like with the Italians and the Jews and whatnot in New York. They were just segregating. This is the segregation in the Star Wars community. Very nerdy, I think, but oh well. Other than Star Wars news...
Oh, I wanted to... Can I tie one thing into that?
Yeah, sure.
Two things, really. I will provide a link to something from... It's either going to be from Reddit or IMGUR. I can't remember which. But basically, it was, hey, George Lucas, stop messing with stop messing with Star Wars or we're going to start messing with you. And it's people who have actually taken Photoshop and they take him from an award ceremony and they removed his beard and they remove his glasses and they make him bald and they do all this stuff. And the sad part is these people have done an amazing job so that you can clearly see that it's still George Lucas. He just looks like a cancer patient. So I'm going to tie that in. I'll put that as an additional link for you under the movie news you review in there for the Star Wars thing. And Steven Spielberg actually took a page out of George Lucas's book. And this is just an incidental. You can find it pretty much anywhere that has entertainment news. It has the 30th anniversary of E.T. coming up.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And so he is putting that on Blu-ray. And he is putting the guns back in the movie.
Yeah, and yeah, he was actually at, I think it was called HeroCon or Hero Complex. I forget, some kind of little convention. Yeah, and he was asking about if he was going to change anything for the Blu-ray. He said, no, he feels that if he does that, it would, apparently people will feel like that their memories of the film will be ruined. And I wholeheartedly agree with that completely. And I thought about that even when A New Hope was first released and re-released. But, I agree with you. That's pretty nifty.
Yeah, I was really excited to hear that because back in the 90s, he had changed it so that the government agents or whatever, when they were initially holding the pistols, he changed them to radios. And everybody, because he was responding to some pressure from some violence groups or whatever, and he got all caught up in that, and he realizes that was a mistake, and so he is now making that right by replacing those walkie-talkies and putting the guns back in. So
As he should.
So I just thought that was pretty funny that he took a page out of George Lucas's book. It's just he showed how to do it right.
Yeah, and even if he can watch, if people can find the video, because I watched the video. He does a great impersonation of George Lucas. So you probably don't know what the heck I'm talking about until you watch the video. So you people find it, or if I can find it somewhere, I'll post it. But it's pretty cool. In other news, Nike is releasing a new type of, sneaker, I suppose. The design is made up of the type of shoe that Marty McFly wore in the Back to the Future Part 2. That is right. They are electronic shoes. We're not really electronic. They're self-lacing shoes, I guess. So they're very
high-tech, cool,
fancy. Yeah, they're pretty badass.
Man. I would love to know exactly how. I mean, I don't know if maybe there's like a gear in there that kind of winds so that it can like kind of clamp the shoelace down. I mean, because how do you do that?
Yeah, and what if it rains? That's another thing I would wonder. Is like, is it water resistant? I would hope so, or maybe water repellent.
Quite frankly, forget the flying cars, forget the self-lacing shoes. I want the hoverboard, damn it.
Yes.
That's what I want. Give me the hoverboard. We're four years out. Give me the hoverboard.
Yeah, we are waiting for that, scientists. Stop global warming, stop the trying to fix. We want the hoverboard. But it's cool about the shoe because there's only 1,500 of them being made. And they're being sold for, what were we saying?
Parkinson's. Depending on the website you go to, I have seen them for as little as $499 and as much as $2,000 or a little over $2,000. I think it was $2,015. So, but other places are already sold out. They're expensive.
Yeah, and all that money is going to, I forget what the exact charity is, but it's to benefit Parkinson's disease and helping to find a cure and help people out. So it's a really good gesture by Nike to do this kind of a little charity gig. That's my news, actually.
Awesome. Well, I have some news as well. The first and foremost, I would like to start off on a serious note here, is that my wife loves all things to do with Twilight, and so I dug for this gem that I have found, which is called the Kristen Stewart School of Acting. And I'm going to provide a link to this on YouTube so that you can truly see what my wife sees when she looks at Kristen Stewart and Rob Patterson and whoever the hell those other people are.
So will it teach you how to bite your lip?
It will teach you how to seem like you have forgotten how to breathe, then remember, and be like crisis averted. That I think is what's going to happen. Hat tip to Rob1234ification at YouTube for that comment, just so you know. But yeah, seriously, it's hilarious. It's a minute and 56 seconds, but it's worth watching. I laughed. And when she's not doing the breathing thing, she's running her hands through her hair. So it's pretty cool. The other thing that I had was for news for this week was, it turns out, if you guys remember back, I think it was like episode 5, 4 or 5, we were talking about Netflix and how they were going to be making their prices higher come the September billing cycle. By July or so, when we were talking about it, new members being brought in were automatically getting billed at the higher prices. But I know that, Tim, you said you went ahead and dropped everything except for online streaming, correct?
I did, yes. I had the one Blu-ray at a time, thing coming up. And it was going to jack up to like $11.99 or $11 or something like that for one Blu-ray at a time. And, as we all know, Instant is only $7.99 or $7, $8. So,
yeah.
Too shabby.
Well, on Thursday, after the markets had closed, Netflix released their numbers, and it turns out that they didn't quite meet what their subscription service thought that they would get. They believe they were at 24 million, and they believed that they were going to be able to, by the end of the quarter, they would have 24,600,000. So they anticipated that by the end of the quarter they'd have 24.6 million from 24. And they kind of missed their mark on that. As a matter of fact, they had 24, and now they have 23.4. They actually thought they were going to gain 600,000, and they lost 600,000.
Good.
From August to September.
Wow.
They lost it all. Yeah, and this is the second time in the company's history that they've ever lost members. They have always gained members every month.
And I would love to see the demographics of that.
They also here's the kicker of this. They also lost 19% of their market share. Okay? They lost $39, almost $39.50 off their share price.
Holy shite.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, that's not to say, it's still not cheap to buy into Netflix. Netflix goes for $169.25 a share. So, just for kicks. It actually, I'm updating now, as of the close of the markets on, it looks like Friday, they actually dropped down to $155.19 a share. So that means they lost another $14, which means they lost another 5%. Market share. So they've lost altogether about 22% market share in this last week. So, go wow. Netflix!
Yeah, I'm pretty sure before we know it, it's just going to be completely instant and no transaction of DVDs or Blu-rays at any time.
Sure. However, when we get the numbers for September, from the July-September quarter, when that releases next month, Netflix still thinks they're going to bring in $10 to $25 million more
because, oh, really?
Because of the increase, because of the people who did stay who are going to pay more, and the people who will still come back or people who will come on board, they'll still be making money on that. I just thought that was really interesting that all those people who were so angry about it and just filled with vitriol, they actually left. I mean, most of the time it's just like, yeah, whatever. And then, no, they left. 600,000 people said, peace out, Netflix. And I just thought that was really interesting. But I will say that they had, in this article, and we'll link to it, it's an Associated Press article, but since they have, in this article, even they mentioned, just like we did before, that Hollywood, all the studios realize that everybody's watching everything online, so they're now trying to charge Netflix way more for all of the rights to stream. And that's why they had to raise the prices of their plans, because they're getting taken for a ride by the studios. As a matter of fact, Hulu is up for sale, and that's owned by NBC Universal, Fox. I think it's like 45-45-10, and it's like 45 NBC Universal, 45 Fox, and like 10 ABC, something like that. And they're up for sale, and they've got Hulu up for sale. It's huge. The amount of money that people are trying to pump into online streaming and all that stuff. It's crazy.
That is bizarre, man.
Crazy, crazy. So that was what I had for news this week. As just a little kind of a bonus thing, which has absolutely nothing to do with anything, but I thought it was just ridiculously freaking cool.
What is that?
This article seems to be like 4 years old, but it was just something that I found in the course of looking up stuff that I thought was ridiculously amazing. I will provide a link to this as well. There is an exhibit in Argentina of basically over 500-year-old mummy. And it's a 15-year-old girl, roughly, they estimate her age to be about 15. And you would think that she's sleeping.
Really? So
perfectly
skin
preserved.
Skin intact?
100%. Really? Everything is that they found blood in her heart and in her lungs. So, I'm looking at these pictures here, and it literally does just look like she's sleeping.
Wow. Is she hot?
Maybe if you're into that thing. There's not really good pictures. They don't have really good pictures of her face. Because she's still in the position that she was found in. So, there's that. But, it is ridiculous, because they have a picture of the scientists handling her, like they're trying to put the clothes on her and whatever. And just chick looks like she's asleep. It's ridiculous. And she's been dead for 500 years. So,
wow.
Yeah. So you'll get to see some pictures of that. And it's a pretty neat article. It takes about a minute or so to read. So
not only do you get to see, learn about movie stuff, but then you can see pictures of dead people as well.
That's right. Well, we are getting closer to
Halloween.
So, yeah. We'll start working on it there. But I thought this was interesting, not just from a just weird, interesting kind of thing, but from an archaeological perspective, anthropological as well.
Yeah.
Really interesting. So anyways, that's the news. That's the news. That's the news. And I think it's time for 3 Squared.
Awesome. Sounds terrific.
3 Squared. So the 3 Squared that we have for episode 9, now that we're finally here, are vistas, scenery that literally could be construed as a character in a film. Think Lord of the Rings, how even though, yes, it was just New Zealand, the way it was filmed, the way that the cinematography played the landscape, you really believed that it became, that it really was Middle Earth. So, with that in mind, and without further ado, Mr. Tim, what were your picks, sir?
My films, I'm not going to go in any particular order. But I will, I will go in any particular order. I will start from the oldest movie and work my way to the newest movie, because actually, it's actually from worst to best, I guess. But worst being still terrific, since it's the top three. The first one, 1956, film called Giant, starring Elizabeth Taylor, Rock Hudson, and I think the ultimate stealer of the movie is James Dean. It's directed by George Stevens, based on a novel by Edna Ferber. This movie, if you're not familiar with it, is basically, it's an epic. It's a big, sprawling epic, and to me, I like this one better than Gone with the Wind. Based in Texas, about the life of a rancher. He marries this woman, played by Elizabeth Taylor. Oil comes into play. James Dean's character finds oil. He makes it huge. He moves to Houston, opens up what is actually supposed to be, in real life, is the Shell. The Shell guy, the guy who invented Shell Oil, is roughly what James Dean's character is. Because they're talking about this big hotel in the film that was actually the old Shell Hotel, or I forget what the exact name is. But the entire film was filmed pretty much in Marfa, Texas, and some of the scenes were also filmed in Dallas and Houston. But the way that the scenery, the vast plains, the desert, the single house on this land, and it's the only house for miles and miles and miles, is just beautiful. And the sights of the sunset and the sunrises and the seasons and the time changing, it's just terrific. And it's inspiring to me to make a swooping epic. And the great thing about the scenery, the top thing about it, is that to me it adds to the romance of the film. The look of it is very romantic. If you pick up a romance novel set in, you know, cowboy times, you know, back in the day, or during when people would ranch, and during the late 1800s and whatnot, this is what it would remind me of, just something swooping and beautiful to look at. My second film is Lawrence of Arabia, 1962. I'm sure many of you are familiar with this. Stars Peter O'Toole and Alex Guinness and Anthony Quinn, directed by David Lean. Most of the film is based in the desert. It's gorgeous. Again, how they use the sun, just showing the sun stagnant in the looking over this desert town, this desert city. And he's riding into it. Just these big, wide-angled shots of all these guys on horses, and the gorgeous costumes, just going down the sand dune or across a hill, or across the desert itself. And it's just gorgeous. The look of the colors, the contrast between the dry, white, yellowy-looking, grainy sand that you can see the grain perfectly, opposed to the beautiful, gorgeous blue sky, and then the characters in between. And to me, that is definitely like one movie I think of that, what movie does, or what one film is the scenery as important than the characters? It would be totally this film. And if you haven't seen it, you have to see it. And finally, my top film is Local Hero. Local Hero came out in 1983. Has a Burt Lancaster and Peter Reigert in it, directed by Bill Forsyth. It's about a guy who works for a big kind of oil company in Houston, gets sent to Scotland to basically swindle the people into selling basically their lives, their homes, their entire town to this company, this big oil company, so they can build this big refinery there. And this town is located right off the coast in Scotland, looking over just gorgeous water. And the movie itself, it has aspects of drama, dry comedy, a love story, as well as enchantment. And basically, not only really the enchantment from one particular character, but as well as the enchantment of the sea itself. And one of the characters falls in love with this girl that, oddly enough, he always meets when she is in the water. Well, it turns out she's actually a mermaid. And this is completely it's totally different from the entire thing of the whole movie. But because she's in the water, from then on, the water itself takes on this character of, you know, there's something enchanting about this coastal town, this coastal you know, this area that the people live here. The film also shows you like the Marfa lights and the beautiful skyline of how gorgeous the stars are, opposed to the grime of city like Houston, for example. But yeah, so those are my three, and I really do recommend all of you to check out all three, and especially Lawrence of Arabia and Local Hero.
Delightful. Okay, so my list, I believe will also be in your vein. I think I'll go from my least favorite to my most favorite. We will start with Dances with Wolves. It's a 1990 flick directed by Kevin Costner, also starring Kevin Costner, Marion McDonald, Graham Greene. And of course, that movie is such a story, it really is just one of the best movies in terms of visual storytelling, because it starts in the starts in 1863, and so we're dealing with the Civil War, which primarily, you know, West Coast East Coast rather, for the vast majority of it, and so we get to see stuff we've always seen there in that layout, and they did, and he does a good job there. But then you get to actually experience him move across the frontier, because it, at that time, and really it was the last time it could have been considered the frontier, was in the 1860s, and you get to see how the expansion of the West became what it was, and the beauty and the majesty of what we have as a country to see, and it's just so beautiful. And aside from the fact that the movie's good, you really get drawn into the story because of everything that you get to see there. But the next movie, incidentally, also a Kevin Costner flick, because I don't know, the man's got an eye for scenery. You can say what you will.
Oh, I agree completely, yeah.
He does, you know, say what you will about him, but I think he's got a great eye for scenery. And this other movie, it's The Postman. Not one of his best films. I like it. Okay, I realize that I'm probably one of 20 people in the world that like it. But I really do like this movie. It's not his best film, and it's not the best movie I've ever seen, but I do like the movie. And again, you really get to see that this one actually takes place in 2013, so now you're getting to see everything on the other side. You get to see kind of the post-apocalyptic nature of the world, and see how it kind of causes a global reset, so that you can still see all of the dystopic views of the landscape, as well as where people have begun to rebuild their lives and the beauty that is the natural beauty that is still there. And again, this movie, again, directed by Kevin Costner, also has it stars Kevin Costner as well. Will Patton plays the bad guy in this movie, so you know, that was always cool. And then, of course, the last movie that I have, and it's a movie that, I don't know, I guess it's kind of my go-to movie. I'm not sure why, but it simply is. And The Quiet Man, again, set in 1920s Ireland. It's John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara, Victor McLaughlin, I think is how you say it, McLaughlin, I don't know. An amazing character actor. But again, it's set in 1920s Ireland, and John Wayne is a bare-knuckle boxer who has kind of come back to his home country to rediscover himself. And then, of course, you know, he meets Maureen O'Hara, and the love story ensues, what have you. But this movie is even known for its photography of Ireland. And it's so beautiful. And it's one of those movies that kind of along with Brigadoon, just make you want to feel like you belong in Ireland, and or Scotland, or in, you know, the British Isles. I definitely think that it's worth watching. All right, so the next Three Squared for next week is going to be kind of a different way of going, since we're kind of already going a different way, but not quite as quirky as this last Three Squared, not quite as abstract. We're going for your favorite composer. I guess we should talk about the movies then. What do you think?
I agree, and let the quarreling begin, I'd say.
Okay, what'd you think of Skyline?
Do we have to start with that one? You know, one thing I will
you
say
recommended
about
it, so I did. Yes, we have
it
to start with it.
I went into it with low expectations. And I wanted to see it mainly because of how bad it was. And I will have to say that Okay, but despite the crummy kind of screenplay, it had a really good pacing. Up until, and we were talking about this before during our pre-show, up until your favorite actor, spoiler alert, of the film, actually dies. And to me, when he dies, that's kind of when the movie dies. And the film has good special effects. The performances aren't as bad. The movie is cliche beyond belief. There's a scene at the beginning when his friend, who's a big, was he a movies producer, movie actor?
Yeah, I want to say he's like a producer of some kind.
He's a big movie guy, and he's wanting his friend, who's the main character, to come out and work with him. And his friend lives out in New York with his girlfriend, who's with him at the in California visiting as well. Well, it turns out when she finds out about this, she flips out, and he tracks her down. It's very dramatic, and they do the, why did you leave? I just found out about it. We'll talk about it. Then she turns around, with her back is towards him, looking out the window, just crying, and suddenly she turns around with a tear rolling down her face. But I'm pregnant! And she just screams it at him, and it's like, oh, no. And it turns into a big, flippin', just melodramatic turd bucket of a smell fest, I in my opinion. And then it kind of goes on, and like I said before, it just goes downhill when that one character dies. And I think it'll make more sense when you kind of give your side of it.
Oh yeah, my thing is first of all, this movie has Donald Faison in it, and I like Donald Faison. You would know him from the lovable boyfriend in Clueless, if you go back that far, and probably more recently as Dr. Turk in Scrubs. So that was the whole reason I was looking forward to this, and yeah, he dies like in the first 15-20 minutes or something. I think that this movie kind of plays out like a cross between an alien invasion movie and a disaster film. Yeah, disaster flick. And I will say that the brothers Strauss, these guys are really good with special effects, and they just should stick to special effects. And this movie was done on a budget of somewhere between 10 to 20 million bucks, and for the budget of the movie, I thought the special effects were really good.
And to let people know, the movie that came out, the other Alien movie that came out around the same time was Battlefield Los Angeles.
Yes.
And the brothers Strauss actually were the, I forget their exact title, but they were one of the special effects people for that movie. And the software that they used for Battlefield LA, they used to make Skyline. And there was actually a lawsuit about the time, because they were afraid that they were using the same special effects.
They were using the same engines,
the software,
and stuff,
yeah,
but
yeah,
none of the shots were the same. So when the discovery phase was presented, Sony dropped the lawsuit. They're like, okay, well, as long as you didn't use the same special effects, we don't care. Because Skyline actually came out like 2 weeks before, or 2 months before Battlefield. So that was why Sony was getting all up in arms about it. But they need not worry. This movie was not ever going to compete with Battlefield. Not that I really like Battlefield, but it was, yeah. Anyway, so I think that this movie, again, I think they should stick to what they know, which is special effects, and they should not be directing. Sad part is that they did say that this movie was going to be part of a series, and that there was going to be at least one sequel. So, good God, let's hope not, but whatever.
On IMDb it says slated for 2012.
Ugh. So, there you go. So that's that. But at any rate, no, the combination disaster flick and alien invasion flick is an interesting way to do it. And I think that, and again, in the vein, think Independence Day meets Towering Inferno. They do try to escape. That's when Donald Faison gets it. And then, of course, they're kind of trapped in the building, and most of the action takes place in the building. And I think that they could have done a lot more with that. I just think that the movie was really and truly very poorly directed. And I think that makes the whole thing suffer. The story was iffy at best. But yeah, I really didn't care for it. I would say that students of special effects should watch it as a learning experience. But that'd be about it for me.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Okay, very cool, very cool. So, California. Tell me about California, sir. That was the movie that I recommended to you.
Okay, well, I'll just spit this out. That California, at the beginning, is dated. Came out early 90s. You can tell it's an early 90s movie. Strictly based on haircuts and clothing. Because people nowadays, whenever
I'm sorry, are those Bugle Boy jeans you're wearing? why? Yes, they are.
I mean, they're wearing shirts. They're wearing David Duchovny wears a dress shirt that is like two sizes too big, and it's buttoned up all the way and no tie. It's just ridiculous. But the film, I wanted to turn it off within the first 10 minutes because I just thought it was. It just not good. I had no idea what to expect. The film is basically about a murderer, played by Brad Pitt. Him and his girlfriend, played by Julie Lewis, who she's pretty, I mean, mentally disabled, I would say. She's just dumb, white trash, just not all there. And she, just a sweet, sweet girl, means good, but she just makes horrible decisions. And they end up catching a ride to California with David Duchovny's character and also the character's girlfriend, played by Michelle Forbes. David Duchovny is a writer, and he's wanting to travel from New York to California and everywhere in between to check out the cool... famous murdering hotspots, I suppose, where his girlfriend, who's a struggling photographer, is going to snap photos as he records. He's going to write a book and just use it as reference or whatever. All right. Well, it turns out that, of course, they're carpooling with a murderer, and shit goes wrong. People get killed, and stuff happens. Now, I will have to say that the film... is when the film is all said and done, it's over when you turn it off, it is something I think I would have to use the word spectacular. I mean, it's excellent, I guess. I mean, it's not a classic film, but it's actually a really good film. The film was actually was supposed to be a David Duchovny vehicle, and Brad Pitt came out on top personally. All right, so basically this film, California, this goes to show why Brad Pitt, to me, is a spectacular actor. I think he's up there on par with Leonardo DiCaprio, just great character actors like him. Brad Pitt has done other great movies. Even Inglourious Basterds was a terrific movie. He even did terrific in Interview with the Vampire, and even Thelma and Louise. He's done so many movies where he just plays these characters that are terrific. And in this movie, it just goes to show how spectacular he is. He creates a character that is, to me, driven by pure evil rather than madness or insanity, I guess. And just like such as just other killers and murderers and in different films and whatnot, where they had something really, really wrong with them that just drove them mad and crazy to where they wanted to kill somebody. The film has fun with its own pace and security within the violence and the characters itself. The movie does have its flaws. Like the beginning of it, it shows like this car crash. And whenever the car flips, you can definitely see the trick bar that actually made the car crash and flip over and all that stuff. I mean, there was kind of revealing stuff like that. And I also had a problem with David Duchovny, his character Brian. I thought earlier on he should have realized that that Brad Pitt, you know, there was something wrong with early Brad Pitt's character. You know, there's just something off with them that he was just not completely there, just by the little mannerisms that he had. The film is, other than that, to me it's a success, really. The film, it feels illogical, as I said at start, but it actually progresses into something thrilling and rather intimidating, and it explores sexuality and humanity, really. And it's just good. It's just a good film in a nutshell. And that's kind of my really fucked up, choppy review of it.
Oh, cool. I guess that leaves us then with Harold and Maude. I found it to be just an amazingly awesome, quirky comedy. Very touching, very heartfelt, and completely out of the blue. Something I have never would have expected to see in a movie. Basically, it is simply about a dude played by the two primary characters are played by Bud Cort and Ruth Gordon. And Bud Cort's a young dude obsessed with death. As a matter of fact, that he attempts suicide in a let's say he role plays suicide. He does not ever truly attempt suicide, but he role plays suicide several times throughout this movie, and because of his fascination with death. He's basically I don't want to say he's spoiled, but he probably feels a sense of entitlement. He is rich, comes from a rich family. And one of his favorite pastimes is watching funerals of complete strangers. And so at one of the funerals, he meets Maude, played by Ruth Gordon, and they form a friendship that actually turns into romance. And now, bear in mind that Maude is 79 and Harold's in his 20s, so you can kind of see where that's going. But even still, this movie is filled with interesting twists and turns in terms of the story, not so much the filmmaking. I don't know. I mean, I really like the pacing. I really enjoyed the insights. You see Maude as this carefree, live life as it comes kind of free spirit to kind of open Harold up. But at times you also get to see just exactly how serious and truly the depth that she carries. And the two specific examples of that I can think of are the umbrella scene, when Harold's at her house one of the first times that he's there, and he points at an umbrella, and she talks about how she used it when she would pick it and protest against things when she was younger, what have you. And you really begin to see just exactly the resolve of this woman and the metal of her. And it's, you know, very, very interesting, very touching. And then the other part is when they're kind of starting to have that romance blossom. And I know you're sitting there thinking, wait, you just said old lady, young dude, I know. But it's... you have to just flow with the movie, and you too will find that it's not done in a disgusting way.
Not at all.
And you see them kind of talking, sitting outside on the rocks by like a lake or a beach, and you know they're kind of talking about, again, whimsical kind of things. But but then he looks down at her arm and she's been tattooed, so he knows. So you find that she was actually a part of the Holocaust. I mean, she was in a concentration camp at some point. Yeah, so those are kind of the things. The end of the movie, it lets me down a bit, but it doesn't destroy the movie. I will say that the ending kind of bummed me out a little bit, but it doesn't destroy the movie. So, but the only thing I would say that I personally didn't like about the movie was the
use of Cat Stevens.
Yeah, the overuse of Cat Stevens. The entire soundtrack is Cat Stevens. So that would really be the only drawback. I'd still say see this movie.
Yeah, and especially when it came out, black comedies like that or dark comedies like that was kind of unheard of, really. I mean, this was the time when, porn was big. It was just film was in an amazing transition. I mean, you also had Bonnie and Clyde, years earlier, that really made it, hit hard with movie folk and really kind of turned everything upside down. This is also during the time of Easy Rider as well, so you can kind of get a an idea of what the mindset of that people were in at the time. And so, this was, you know, in my opinion, just a big game changer in the role of comedies and genres, I suppose.
Outstanding. Yes. And again, so thank you for recommending that to me. I appreciate it. Definitely liked it. And I guess then we should go ahead and talk about some Twilight Zone.
That is correct. It's been like 4 years since we did it. I mean, it's crazy.
Apparently, maybe we're in our own fifth dimension. A place called the Twilight Zone. let's see here. So, the episode was Perchance to Dream, which basically is about a guy who is kind of in a bit of a life-altering quandary. He has basically a very weak heart, so he cannot be, he cannot overexert himself, and he does not do well with surprises. And yet, he has vivid dreams, and he started to have this completely weird, vivid nightmare, basically. And so the problem is that if he gets too involved with this vivid nightmare, it could scare him to death. And so he doesn't want to sleep. Well, of course, we all know what happens, that eventually if you don't sleep, you will die. So what do we do? And that's kind of the quandary that he's faced with, and he goes to see a psychiatrist about it, and that's kind of the whole episode. There is a twist in this one, so I don't want to give away the twist of it. I will say, though, that I was really not very impressed with this particular episode. It seemed to take too long to get anywhere with me. And I like the idea of the episode, but I'm not sure I dig the execution of it. And this is also bearing in the prism of watching it in 2011, knowing that it was made in 1959. I'm not holding that against it. I just think that it still could have been done a little bit better.
I agree to an extent. I didn't care for it too much, but I honestly can't think of how else they could have done it. But thinking of myself in the early 50s, I guess, if I was alive in 1959, I guess, and watching this as a kid or an adult, it probably would have freaked me out. I mean, you know, especially the ending, that's just something.
Well, but see, that's just it, though. For me, even trying to bear it in, you know, thinking of it in its time, I think that it was trying a little too hard to, quote, be scary. And subsequently, I think it failed because it uses confusion and sensory evasion, I guess, my own little made-up term. But basically, it's trying to, you know, oh, what's this confusing object over here with this confusing layout over here with the smoke and the mirrors, and, oh, I don't understand what I'm looking at. And it's that lack of understanding that kind of creates the panic. And that has to be done subtly. And it wasn't. It just seemed a little too in your face, and so that's why I say it seemed to take too long to get anywhere for me.
But at least we got a little dance of a Catwoman.
This is true.
A little sexy cat dance.
That's right. It's interesting to see what our grandparents thought of as passing for sexy back then. Definitely, it is definitely not what you would see in a strip club today. That's for sure. Matter of fact, I don't even think that would get you past the first round of So You Think You Can Dance. But that's just me. So, I guess then, so next week then, we have Judgment Night, which will be the episode that we're watching there. And I guess we should talk about recommendation. Classic movie recommendation for me is Romancing the Stone. Douglas, Kathleen Turner, and of course the ever-present Danny DeVito, who I think steals every scene he's in this movie. I like it. It's kind of it is an interesting take on the adventure flick, combining it with a romance movie with a buddy picture twist to it. And I really liked how they pulled that off. I think it's a good movie, personally.
Yeah, and I agree. And also, we were talking about scenery and whatnot earlier. Gorgeous scenery as well. Great location.
Yes, yes, very good location shooting for this movie, and which adds to it. I wouldn't say that it's a character, but I think it adds to it. So, what's the movies? What movies are we watching next week, Mr. Tim?
What movies are we watching next week? I believe we are watching Hobo with a Shotgun.
Yes,
together.
That's the
we
one,
both
yes.
have not seen it. It's the take of kind of a the classic cult movies of the late 70s, early 80s. I guess it was something that it's been on my queue for a while. Been wanting to see. And I believe it was on yours for a while as well. So that should be fun. We also have... what are you recommending to me?
Expendables.
The Expendables. The Sylvester Stallone throwback to 80s action.
Yes. It's the homage to the 80s action flick that has everybody in it. If they're an action movie star, they're in it.
Yeah, exactly. And I recommended to you the Ryan Reynolds film Buried, the... What I think is kind of a modern day Hitchcock, close to a Hitchcockian type film.
Well, cool. Well, then, and that one was definitely on my queue for a while. So we will see how that goes when we come back for next week. So I think that's it.
Awesome. Cool. Finally, we have returned.
Just a bit, I think. All right, so as you all know, the music that you listen to every week with us here is provided by our music partners, Cries of Solace. You can always find them at Facebook or MySpace.com/Cries of Solace. And then, of course, you can contact us by coming to the website, slscast.com. You can send us an email to theslscast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @theslscast. You can go to iTunes and subscribe there. And, of course, you can always leave comments on iTunes or leave comments on the website. We would love to hear from you. And
yes, we really would.
Yeah, so please, keep those comments coming. And I guess that's really about it. Yeah?
I think so.
Very cool.
I definitely think so.
Very cool. All right. Well, then we will catch you guys next time.
That's right.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, @theslscast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.